In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Just a reminder that Diet Starts Tomorrow is a podcast for entertainment purposes only. It is not a medical podcast and does not constitute medical advice. Always seek the advice of a physician or a health professional. Hello and welcome to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Emily.
And I'm Lauren.
And we have a really exciting episode today. We're going to bring in a dating coach. Her name is Lily Womble. We're so excited to talk to her.
Oh my God, I cannot wait.
So truly excited because she's a feminist dating coach.
Feminist, confidence.
Not your grandma's dating coach. And we were trying to figure out, like, what should we specifically ask her about? So somewhere along the way, we thought, why not ask her to solve Lauren's dating problems?
Yeah.
Because as we know, Lauren hasn't had sex in 5 years.
Oh my God, I didn't know that was going to come up, but I guess that makes sense, sex and dating.
I mean, they are related, right?
Yeah, and so we're bringing an expert.
It's related because you made a decision.
Yeah.
You weren't going to have sex with somebody until you felt, you know,
super into it.
Super into it. But the problem is that would require dating people,
yeah,
which you also have kind of like this aversion towards. And I would love to get to the bottom of it. So like, what a better person than Lily to ask that.
I hope she can fix me. Just kidding. Nothing's wrong with me, but it will be good to get a professional's perspective on, you know, all my dating situations. I think it's so funny you brought up sex. I don't know why I didn't think about sex until you said that, because you know what? I do think that plays a role, because I think I did kind of accidentally throw out the baby with the bathwater when I was like, well, I'm not going to have sex unless I'm super into it. And then it's like, oops, I stopped dating.
Right. it's like, I guess there's no sex now.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, let's walk it back. I it's not just about the sex. It's also about, you know, companionship,
totally. Friendship,
putting yourself out there. So like, what is your current dating situation? You told me that you had somewhat of an epiphany recently.
I've had so many like romance-y epiphanies lately with like none of the romance, which is so me.
Yeah.
But so my dating life right now, I'm not trying to be funny. It is non-existent. Like, I have apps on my phone, but I just don't like any of the people who like me. And when I like someone, they ghost. Like, it's just, it's a mess. I'm aware that the problem isn't completely me, you know?
Oh, everybody has that experience on the apps,
by
the way.
I'm a woman in her 30s in New York City who's also a comedian, who's in a bigger body. Like, it's complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's hard for everybody. I mean, I'm sure there are so many people that can relate to that. When you're on the apps, you feel a little disconnected to the people that you're matching with.
Yeah.
I've had that thought so many times before. Like, wow, I totally just discarded that person, mm-hmm. that face that popped up. But that could have been the one for me. Like, I've had that thought before. Like, we are conditioned to just like kind of judge these people on face value,
yeah.
based on a few questions and based on some pictures. But are you talking to people on the apps and the conversation just goes nowhere, or do you not even get there?
No, I have conversations, and I'll even, you know, date people here and there. Like last summer, I was dating a guy. We went on 8 dates, you know?
8 dates?
8 dates. You know, this was around the time where I had gotten comfortable with the idea of like, oh, I'm only having sex if I'm really into it.
Sure.
And I think I also got maybe too comfortable with some like internalized, maybe patriarchal things where I wanted the man to initiate more.
Okay.
You know, because I was thinking like, oh, well, he'll initiate eventually. And when I'm ready, I'll give him the sex, you know, but he never initiated it. And then I just started to feel like I was his home health aide just like coming over and sitting with him, you know? And then I feel
reading
like
reading him, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
Right. And we had a lovely time together, but it just so much time passed without physical intimacy where it kind of just dwindled off. And I, in retrospect, I'm like, I should have initiated sex sooner. But the thing is, I found out that he's even less sexually experienced than me. So we somehow found each other because when we had this like lovely breakup chat, I sort of came out of the no sex closet and I was like, well, it's been this long for me. And he goes, well, I had sex a year ago, but it was for the first time.
Okay. Yeah. Then my follow-up question was going to be virgin or, but that's like a step up.
Which made me kind of like him more. I was like, I wish you would have told me this so I would have known like we have this thing in common. And then we could have maybe bonded over that, but it was just like there was this like invisible wall up between us. Like, so I do go on dates and I have these mini relationships, but they don't seem to go anywhere. As some background on this thing that I do with crushes is I do this cliche thing, and I know it probably has something to do with having an absent father or whatever, but I do this thing where I will develop intense years-long crushes on men who—
Years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Years-long crushes on me. I will hyperfixate on someone who doesn't like me, on someone who is unavailable. In high school, it was like my gay best friend.
He was gay at the time. He was out?
No, but—
But he turned out to be. No, I have a few of those.
I also dated a gay guy. Like, it really— I used to cuddle and make out with my gay guy friends in college because I knew it wouldn't go anywhere. It was very safe. Like, I get why I do it. It's safe. It's fun. Like, you get the endorphins of, oh, I have this big crush, and oh, is he gonna— He texted me, and he said I looked pretty today, and it doesn't go anywhere, and that's very safe to me because if it goes somewhere, you know, fill in the blank, you could get hurt, you know, and I've been hurt before, and it's just, like, so basic, but it is my pattern.
That makes so much sense, the way that you just explained that. I feel like a lot of people do that. It's safe to have a crush from a distance.
It's like imaginary relationships. And it's not even real feelings. It's like an obsession of sorts.
Yeah, limerence, they call it.
Limerence?
I believe it's called limerence. Like when you're so obsessed with somebody and you develop like almost feelings of love.
Yeah.
It's a pattern that pops up in toxic relationships.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're almost glamorizing the other person.
It got me into like a very severe codependent relationship in my early 20s, having this like obsessive mindset with guys. Cause what eventually happened was one finally liked me back. And that was a recipe for disaster.
You're like, never mind.
And you know, this is something I know about myself that I think I healed, you know, like it's something I thought was like zipped up and done because I figured it out in therapy. But like, you still want to do what you're prone to do. And so one of my epiphanies I had recently was that I fucking did it again. Like now at 35. But I met this guy a couple years ago, immediately clicked. Immediately. We became fast friends. He is tall. He is handsome. Anyways.
He checks all the boxes.
He's funny. He thinks I'm funny. You know, crush happened immediately. It's like, I'm a human in a body. Like, I'm gonna have a crush on this very nice man.
He's crushable.
You know? Also, how we met was walking into a party together and we were going up all these stairs and I needed to take breaks and I was like, just go without me. And he was like, no, I'll wait with you.
Oh my God.
I know. Such a nice
Lauren,
guy.
That's a meet cute.
I know. We have all these things in common. We have like this psychic connection. And so I've always thought I had like this deep, deep crush on him. But anyways, I won't give away too much specifics, but he was away for over a year, okay? He just got back like a month ago. And this whole year that he was away, subconsciously, I was doing this thing where I was like, well, I'll just date him when he gets back. Or I'll, you know, like I have a crush and it's this person who literally is not around for a year.
Right. He's like your husband who went to war.
Right.
You're writing Dear John letters.
But I didn't even know I was doing that. But I was doing that. I wasn't really dating. And so he gets back and we go to dinner. Like we do romantic things together. It's confusing.
Okay.
And we go to—
But you've never hooked up or
no,
anything.
No. And we even had a thing where I told him I had feelings before he went away. And,
really?
And he was like, he was like, I am unavailable. He was like, I am away. Also, I see you as a friend. Like, you're my friend, you know? So like, he already told me that, but still like the sick thing in my brain wants to latch on to something that won't happen because that's safer than the actual possibility of falling in love and finding a partner and all these things. So anyways, we're at dinner, we're catching up and he's telling me about like some, you know, some girls he's been seeing, you know, and I start to get jealous because he dates a lot. And I'm just like, Why won't he date me? And then I was like, oh my God, I just want him to like me because he likes all these other girls. Like my ego just wanted the validation of him liking me and wanting to date me. And so then I did this thing where I was like, well, let me test out this theory. This is so embarrassing. So I looked at him and I pictured him on top of me having sex with me.
While you guys are still eating dinner?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I was like, I need to figure out if I have a crush on this guy. And so I was like,
I get the concept. It's just the, I'm thinking about you like at dinner.
It was in
you
a
guys
split
are having
second,
a normal like, conversation.
It was in a split second.
Okay.
That's
all it takes.
So anyways, I imagined my friend like inside me, which I'm sure like guys do all the time with their girlfriends.
All the time.
So I like literally, I've had a crush on this guy for years and I've never pictured us having
suddenly,
sex.
No, you're so right.
Yeah.
Every single guy who has female friends, they will know instantaneously if you say like, would you sleep with that girl?
Right.
Instantaneously,
right.
Because they've already thought of it.
But for me, it was about the obsession and the fantasy. And so it was like this reality check that I'd never given myself before where I was like, picture yourself having sex with him. And as soon as I did, I was like, oh God, that's my friend. No, get off of me.
I see what you're saying. So it was more like this obsession with like, oh, I just want him to like me because that's validating.
You know?
But you didn't even really think about like, oh, do I actually like him physically or romantically?
Right. I mean, he's very handsome, but I pictured him inside of me and I was like, get out of me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's how he feels about you.
So mean to say it like that.
It is mean to say it like that. But he said he only sees you as a friend.
He did.
But like, I relate to that so much actually of like, even if I only see someone as a friend, I still want them to be in love with me. Like, even if I would never date them, never hook up with them, like that's not something I want at all. I still want them to like pine for me.
You're
a little
only
bit.
Human. And he's only human. I don't think he's doing that douchebag thing where he's like, I'm going to string her along. Like, he genuinely cares for me. I genuinely care for him.
It sounds like it.
I'll probably reference him later. You know, he's a person in my life, but it was very crystallizing for me to realize, oh, I don't have a crush on him. I'm just, my ego is mad that he doesn't like me.
But it's so fucked up because when you think about that with like your female friends, you know, or, you know, I guess if somebody's bisexual, maybe like they have female friends.
Oh, I have bi female friends who have very explicitly told me they would have sex with me.
Oh, that's flattering.
And I'm like, that's so nice to know. Insert fake name here, but no, thank you.
That's so flattering, though.
Yeah, my listen.
See, I think
my bi girls and my lesbian girlfriends are the best.
I think it brings friendships even closer.
It does.
When there's a little bit of sexual tension.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it.
While he was gone, I had this like subconscious waiting for him thing happening. Even though he literally said, I'm not interested in you. And literally, and because he's emotionally literate, he was like, also, I'm unavailable, like, don't do that thing you do, you know?
The reason why I'm asking is because, like, sometimes, and I don't know if it's intentional, but I feel like sometimes mm-hmm. guys like that attention, too,
yeah.
from their friends.
He's only human. I don't want to, like...
And I'm not saying he's an evil person or that that's a bad thing, but everybody likes, you know, that kind of validation, mm-hmm. that kind of attention. So as long as he's being explicitly clear... and you're being explicitly clear, I don't think there's a problem with
it. There's definitely not a problem. And I'm glad that I had that epiphany. And I think the good thing is that there's sort of like this lane that's cleared, but it feels like I've taken out emotional trash, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, okay, I did this thing with crushes on unavailable people. And I feel like I just cleared the last one, you know, and now there's this like runway. And I think I have time to explain one more little epiphany that I had.
Oh, there's another epiphany.
There's another epiphany that happened like a week later. And that epiphany, spoiler, is that I do want a date. I had a show recently. And there was a comic on the show who's a guy. Everybody loves this guy. Nobody doesn't love this guy. I love this guy. Fun show. We hang out. We go get a drink after. I'm like, oh, this is fun. And I was like, oh, I think I like him, you know? And then he's like, okay, well, I got to go. And he reveals that he's dating this other girl, you know? And so I'm so chill. I'm so cool about it. In the moment, I feel like nothing's wrong, but I get in my Uber to go home. And in the Uber, I felt this very familiar feeling of romantic disappointment of like somebody not being interested in me. And it was different than with my, you know, guy friend that I had that crush on. This was like, you know, because it felt like we were vibing. And I think in my head, I had sort of developed another little crush. And maybe this doesn't sound like the healthy epiphany that I think it is. But anyways, when I'm in the Uber, I feel this feeling of disappointment. And I felt sad, but I didn't let it overtake me. And instead, I remember feeling positively. Like I was like, oh man, he doesn't, oh, that's a missed opportunity. And then I went, oh my God, you're sad that you have a missed opportunity. With you want a date. You wanted to date him, you know, because I didn't want to date my friend. But yeah. This is someone who I did want to date, who did, you know? And so right. It was kind of exciting to be like, oh, I'm upset.
Yeah. So what you're saying, tell me if I'm getting this right. What you're saying is like, in this case, it felt like actual romantic interest, whereas the other one was kind of like somebody that you had a connection with and it was the crush for the sake of having a crush.
Right. Like this other person, if I were to picture myself having sex with them, I would be into it is kind of what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
And so when that person, and they didn't even reject me, like they're like a friend of mine and then they're dating this other friend. It's all like on paper, intellectually, nothing is wrong. Like everything's fine.
Listen, no ring, no problem.
I'm just saying emotionally, it brought up stuff for me.
Yeah.
And I also was able to notice this negative thought pattern that again, thought it was gone, came back where I had this thought pop into my head where it was like, of course he's dating her. She's thin. She's pretty. And then I immediately, I was like, we're not doing that. Mm. We're not defining your worth on your body size. And we're not defining her worth on her body size. You don't know anything about their relation. You know, I was able to immediately, and this is thanks to cognitive behavioral therapy that I do like weekly, that I was able to catch the thought and redirect it. And I think that's another fun epiphany because it's like, has that been getting in my way? That's something to talk to Lily about is like this assumption based in truth that somebody doesn't want to date me because of my body size, you know? And so when you find out a crush, it's like an old wound. When you find out a crush is dating a skinny girl, it like cuts this like middle schooler part of you. But mm-hmm. That part of you is, it's like, it's a lie. It's not somebody... It's not that somebody's not choosing you based on your body size. It's just what happened.
Just because somebody dates somebody who looks different than you does not mean necessarily that they wouldn't date you. But you've also had that direct experience before of somebody telling you were too big for them.
Right.
And I've had that experience before too, and you don't forget it.
You have to fight back the thoughts when they pop back
in. For sure. I mean, my boyfriend's ex-girlfriend is a tiny, wispy little girl. Like, we don't look alike at all. Mm-hmm. I was a little insecure about that. Like, if he dated somebody who looked like that, why does he want to date me? Like, I would think I was kind of putting myself down a little bit.
Right.
I eventually realized, like, no, because if I look at the people that I've dated, they all look different. So why am I just assuming that all men are so shallow
right,
that they only want to date these little ethereal fairies and they don't want to date anybody else?
Probably because a lot of them do. That's where it gets nuanced, you know? It's like,
I don't know that that's true. I started approaching dating from like, I try not to even consider like what the other person wants in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I just think about what I want. And then the person who wants what you are will just be attracted to you. You know what I mean?
You are totally right. And guess what? I'm getting another classic Lauren epiphany right now.
Ooh. Oh my God. An epiphany in real time.
So choogy of me. I think what I'm doing is I'm assuming when I'm like, men are like this or men want skinny women. I'm thinking of like the worst ones. You know,
yeah, yes.
because these men do exist.
You're thinking of men who value women just based right. on an aesthetic.
And that's not hashtag all men, you know?
It's not. It's really not. Like, I don't know where this narrative came from. And this is something that I say a lot. And I know it's not like the perfect analogy for this, but like the most popular or one of the most popular porn searches is BBW. Like men are attracted to bigger women. We can't say that men are only attracted to one body type. That's just not true.
But they live in the patriarchy where they get credit, they get points for dating thinner women.
And that is, you know,
because I will get hit on by people who are in relationships. It's like a classic fat girl trope. Where it's like, you want to take us out to the Chinese restaurant and then have sex with us at your apartment, but you're not going to take us to the restaurant in town where everyone's going to see you with me, and you're not going to take me as your date to the wedding because I'm the fat girl. You're going to take this other girl. Like, I've run into this before. Like, there's a comic who, like, very openly likes big girls, but his girlfriend is a size 2, you know? And he'll still hit on bigger girls. And it's like, we all see what, like, really matters to him, which is appearances.
Yeah, and when you
but
think
that's
about
not
it,
all men.
That it's not, and it's also so sad. Like, it's so sad. Think about it from this perspective. Like, imagine being so attracted to something, but because of shame, you don't want other people to know that, so you just stuff it down or, like, only have, you know, brief affairs with people who are like that, but that's what you're attracted to. That's kind of sad.
It is.
But whatever, enough about them. So what specifically do you want to talk to Lily about?
Right. So I'm excited to talk to Lily because I'm feeling, you know, the fight, flight, or freeze thing?
Yes, but you could explain it for the listener.
So when you're, it's this concept that when you are presented with a conflict or danger, we have these natural responses, and it's either fight, like you go head in and address your issues, flight, you avoid them, and then there's freeze, which is you just freeze. You don't make any choices whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm a freezer with so much stuff in my life, and right now I'm frozen. Like, I have all these fun epiphanies. Again, the epiphanies are, I don't have a crush on this guy I thought I had a crush on. I do want a date, and then now it's like, okay, well, now what do I do? You know, like, I'm tired. Yeah. I'm 35. I'm feeling very frozen, and I would love some validation from Lily, honestly. Like, I would love for her to be like, these are great epiphanies, and pat me on the back, and then maybe give me some tips.
Yeah, like some actionable steps. Right. Of like, how do I move forward and start pursuing people with this new lens of, like, looking for what you actually want.
Right.
Because, yeah, it sounds like you're falling into a pattern of these unattainable crushes that go nowhere, and like, you want them to go nowhere. But now at 35, you're at a point where like, you don't want it to go nowhere. And that's power, Lauren. That's power.
It's power, and it's freaky, and I'm definitely scared, but in a good way.
Okay, thank you for sharing all of that, Lauren. When we come back, we'll have Lily Womble in here, and we'll be talking about her feminist approach to dating.
It feels like cat food has been the same forever. Smelly, boring, made of mystery ingredients. That's why you've got to try Smalls. Smalls cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge. And it's delivered right to your door. Make the switch from kibble and give your cat a meal they'll love. We actually sent some to my friend who is fostering kittens, and it is the only thing they will eat. It comes in these pate packages, and you scoop it, and you just feel like you're a chef for your baby kitties, and they j'adore it. Your cute kitty is descended from ferocious desert cats who hunted live prey. Even if your cat prefers to nap all day, they still need fresh, protein-packed meals for a balanced and healthy diet. Other brands fill their food with mysterious meat byproducts, artificial flavoring, and preservatives with names I don't even want to try to pronounce. After switching it up to Smalls, 90% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. That's major. The team at Smalls is so confident your cat will love their product that you can try it risk-free. That means they'll completely refund you if your picky cat won't eat their food. Now is the time to make the switch to Smalls. Head to smalls.com/DST and use promo code DST at checkout for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you have to use my code DST for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code DST for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping, baby.
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any 6 styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Nuuly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there, and they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life, so it's great to be able to rent them. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles, but right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Nuuly, that's Nuuly.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com, Nuuly with 2 U's, with code DST20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Welcome, Lily. We're so happy to have you here with us. Lily is a dating coach. She's got a book coming out called Thank You More Please. We're so excited to have you. Welcome to Betches.
I'm so glad to be here. Let's get into it.
The feminist approach to dating. This is something that I'm really curious about. What about dating has been lacking in terms of feminism? Like, do you think that dating practices nowadays are inherently not feminist?
I think that most of the dating world that we know right now is a hotbed of patriarchal bullshit, which we can trace back to like women, people socialized as women couldn't. It was recently the 50th anniversary of when a woman could get a credit card without her husband's permission, right?
Yeah.
It was last, like 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So that economic like just reality would lead to the necessity to settle. Right. Mm-hmm. And that in 1970, 50 years ago, wasn't that long ago. Mm-mm. And so if we think of the historical perspective and the necessity of women to settle romantically in order to survive, of course, the dating world is imbued with this patriarchal bullshit.
Right.
Like this idea of, are you sure you don't want too much? Are you sure you're not being too picky? Are you sure you know what you want? Ugh, right.
There's a lid for every pot. I hate it when people say that. I'm like, what? What kind of fucked up pot do you think I have that I need a very special lid to put on it?
Well, and I think that message that you'll probably hear from a lot of people on the dating streets, like, you're just not in your feminine enough.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up, because I've been hearing this everywhere. Like, ladies, tap into your feminine energy. And every time I hear it in a TikTok video or an Instagram reel or a dumb, you know, dating meme, I'm like, what does that even mean? Aren't we ditching feminine and masculine as like these binary things?
I look, for some people, it can be a helpful tool. For me, when I hear that, I want to crawl out of my skin, right? Because what I'm hearing is be submissive. I mean, yes. I was raised in the Deep South.
Me too.
Where?
South Carolina, Charleston, and Columbia.
Birmingham, Alabama.
I know, I saw that. Wow. I was like, I'm so excited for our guest because she's a Southerner.
Two Southern gals with bobs.
Is in New York now. Like,
we've got to grab a drink.
We're the same. Let's go. Yeah, hang.
Great, great, great.
You can come, I guess, Emily.
So
just a Yankee with long hair. I don't belong.
And a stunning curtain bang.
Oh, thank you. I just cut them yesterday.
So pretty. Looks great.
Anyway. Back to the divine feminine.
Well, raised in the Deep South, I went to weddings as a 10-year-old, younger, older. And I saw a woman vow to be subservient to her husband in her vows, uh-huh. Right?
Core memory.
And I remember as a young kid not having the language to describe why I felt uncomfortable, yes, or angry, and watching all these people around me tacitly be like, yes, that's what, uh-huh, is right to do. And whenever I hear that advice of like, just be in your feminine more, again, it can be a helpful tool for some.
Right.
However, for me, dating in the world and being told from a very young age, you're too much. Mm-hmm. It felt like a life sentence of loneliness, this idea of like, you're too much, you're gonna have a hard time finding a husband. My mother told me that at age 12. Mm.
What do you think she meant by that, though?
Well, now, as an adult, we've had conversations about it, and it was actually really nerve-wracking for me to hand her my book, because we have a close relationship.
She's called out.
And and I was really nervous about it. It all turned out to be fine.
Yeah.
But she now is like, you know what? I was in the patriarchal socialization too. And her uncle told her, you're too much.
Right.
And, mm-hmm, so it was just passed down this generational trauma essentially, mm-hmm. of women being told to lessen themselves in order to belong. Because if we think about, like, what helps, we're built for belonging and rejection. We fear it like we fear death. So a woman, especially in a Southern context, a conservative context, speaking her mind, taking up space.
Oh, you're sassy. Have you been called sassy before?
I've been called, like, inappropriate. Mm. You know? Like that was too much, Lily. Like, you were being a lot, you know, bless your heart, but you know, you need to tone it down.
Bless your heart.
Oh my God. So yeah, I mean, I think that this idea of shrink yourself is very commonly, while people might not say like shrink yourself to find love, that's the implicit statement that they're making when they say things like you're being too picky or just like be in your feminine more and like change your personality a little bit to be more palatable.
Yeah. I've definitely, Emily and I have talked about it on the podcast, but I have been told that I'm just too much or just too big. And I definitely, I know that's something you talk about. You talk about being, embracing your too much, which I'm definitely interested in hearing more about because I've been made to feel like I'm too much with my personality because I'm like an extrovert, Virgo, comedian, you know, I am a lot, but it's not bad that I'm a lot. Like I've got a lot of, it's fun. It's a lot of good fun. And then also—
Your friends value your allotness.
My friends do. I'm a plus size woman. I've been made to feel like my body is too much. Mm-hmm. Like I need to shrink my personality and my size to find a mate. And it's just, I'm such a rebel. Like, I don't know if you read any of the backstory we sent, but like, oh, I don't think we even included it. But I've actually been single for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. I haven't had sex in 5. Mm-hmm. Like I'm so over just all the dating bullshit, patriarchal bullshit, sizes bullshit. Like it's so bad that I don't even want to engage with it. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear more about embracing your too much because I've just only been taught to not.
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of like you're doing self-protection to like because you see on the dating streets that things are hard. Like dating is intense.
We're wearing a lot of armor.
Wearing a lot of armor, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, right? I think that you don't have to make yourself emotionally unsafe in order to pursue love until you feel like my nervous system is ready for that shit, you know?
Thank you for saying that. That is very validating.
You have permission, right? Like I don't want to be a dating like coach. I'm a feminist dating coach. I think like that informs everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And so when you're in front of me telling me like I've been single for 10 years, I'm like, cool. Like what do you want from your life next? And does dating or love or sex, is that involved? And so thinking of it in terms of like how can I center my desire instead of the fear? And then based on what I want, how can I give myself permission to take up more space with what I want, which is the opposite of the you're too much narrative, right? Because the you're too much narrative,
it's thinking about the other person. Sorry to interrupt. I'm the
please,
worst.
Please. No, like we're in conversation. So I think the you're too much narrative is all about assuming that you exist to please someone else.
Right. It's about the other person.
Yeah.
Fuck this other imaginary person.
Yeah.
What do I want?
Yeah. And this is one of my favorite things that I unpack in the book because it seems so counterintuitive to people, especially who have been playing the numbers game or like going on dates that don't feel right. It's like, I believe that you're for the few, not for the many. Mm-hmm. And that if you dated like that, if it was okay, if you were unbothered by the people who were wrong for you or unbothered by the people who thought you were too much, which easier said than done, then you could finally center yourself in your dating life, which I think dating can be a radical act of agency and real confidence that is grounded in the truth that you're like human and you are worthy of what you want, right?
Right. That's beautiful.
Do you notice that men mostly, I mean, I am making a generalization here, but they already date like that. They're so good at centering themselves. I'm not even making a joke. It sounds like I am kind of, but they're so good at being like, do I like this person? Not focusing so much on do they like me or how can I make them like me?
Well, I want to, like, of course the patriarchy has fucked us all up, both and, right? The world has socialized men to not do as much emotional labor and caregiving in interpersonal relationships in order to be safe, right? Like, I was, taking it to my story. I don't know if you feel this raised in the Deep South, but the idea of having people over to your house and everybody has to be taken care of before you do anything for yourself. And you need to, maybe you feel this.
I do, too. Yeah.
But that socialization of that women undergo to center everyone else before themselves, that you're not a good woman unless you center everyone mm-hmm. else before yourself. Like, of course men date differently. Of course men center themselves more inherently, and this is a generalization, and I think it's kind of true.
Yeah, wow, that is so true, because when people come over, sometimes a few hours in, I'll realize that I'm starving. Like, I'll realize that yes. I haven't eaten anything because I've been serving God. Everybody else snacks. And yes. yeah, that has happened more than one time. But we were talking about that with Lauren, and we emailed you prior with Lauren's entire dating situation.
All my ish.
All her issues, her epiphanies.
You've had a lot of ahas.
Yes, she's had a lot of ahas.
I was saying, I was like, that's what I want Lily to say. I want her to say good job for my epiphanies.
Well, we can get that out of the way. Good job for your epiphanies. Killing it. I'm live. This is great.
Thank you.
Yeah, but one
thing. That's the end of the podcast.
That's it. We've solved it. No, but one thing that popped up that I thought was really interesting was this feeling of you met somebody that you were kind of interested in, you were at least attracted to this person, and then you realized that he was going on a date with somebody else. Mm. And you had that thought of like, well, of course he's dating her. Mm-hmm. And it was like this unhappiness that he didn't like you based on this other person that he was going
for. Yeah, it was kind of like an old thought, you know, mm-hmm. old thought patterns mm-hmm. that pop back up.
Of course, she's skinny. That's what I read in the email.
That's yeah. what it was, yeah.
Like, of course he likes her because she's not fat. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, Lauren, like your body isn't why somebody is dating you. Her body probably isn't why somebody is dating her. Mm-hmm. But it's also confusing because sometimes it is.
Well, not that you're asking. What I would do is do exactly what you did, which is have compassion for that version of yourself who's having that thought.
Yeah, that little teenager inside of me.
Right. Like, you don't have to shut her down.
Yeah.
Because you have lived experience mm-hmm. of fat phobia.
Right.
There you have lived experience. So you need to give yourself the benefit of that context mm-hmm. instead of just being like, shut up. Think something more positive.
Right.
That's not.
Right.
Like, and this is the both and of it all, which mm-hmm. the both and is like moving from an either or, either I'm too big and she's small and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Or, right, so the both and is both. I have lived experience of fat phobia and that really fucking sucks.
Yes.
And of course I'm triggered by him not wanting to be with me and him being with somebody thinner.
Ooh, that's validating AF.
And both and this may not mean everything.
Right.
About what happened, about my future. And of course, my brain went to that first truth, and it doesn't have to be the truth that I believe moving forward.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. I needed to hear that because right. the way I was explaining it to Emily was I was like, it's an old negative thought, and I had to get it out of the way. And it's
yeah,
like,
it was kind of like, shut up. Don't yeah. think that, brain.
But it's like, yeah, I have experience of fat phobia, and like, of course, that little things are going to trigger me. It's just how I respond, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess we can just cut to the chase here. Like, so the other epiphany, well, actually it was based on this scenario where I felt rejected by him. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling this familiar sadness mm-hmm. in the Uber ride home of rejection. Mm-hmm. But then I got happy because I was like, oh, I wanted to date him. Oh, do I want to date?
Yeah.
I think I want to date, you know? So, and I've just been so, again, haven't had sex in 5 years. I'm very like triggered from so much dating stuff. It's yeah. annoying. I'm in New York City. I'm in my 30s. I'm a comedian, you know? Yeah. So I just kind of have had all these walls up and armor on. And now I'm kind mm-hmm. of like, oh, do I want to date? But I'm yeah. totally frozen. I don't know how to even try again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And what I wanted to say to you after reading that, I was like, oh, you just need to do it messy.
Do it messy.
Oh.
You just, you're, I think that another way that the patriarchy sneaks up into our brain
right.
is in the form of perfectionism. Like,
how do I do this perfectly?
How do I do this perfectly in order to keep myself safe? But here's yeah. the deal. We're humans in the world. We're bumbling around. We're having social interactions. Uh-huh. We're feeling awkward. We're feeling a lot of things. We want to vomit when we ask somebody out because it's so nerve-wracking, right? Like, what if you just gave yourself permission to be human here mm-hmm. and to want something and to be figuring it out by taking messy action?
Right. I love that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well,
Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, so here's another component.
Tell me.
Which I'm sure you're familiar with. Which is, oh, this is so vulnerable and so embarrassing, and but so normal. But I have this thing where I'm so fucking self-aware. Where
you're too self-aware. I think it is a thing.
I'm afraid to admit that I want it. You know, like, yeah. I know I've been saying that I do, but like to truly internally admit that. Love, romantic love, companionship, partnership is something that I want because it feels embarrassing if I say that I want it and then I don't find it.
Can we get into this?
Yeah.
Why does it feel embarrassing?
I don't know. I think maybe it's because I'm a performer. To me, maybe everything I do is supposed to
Do you think it
look
means
good or I don't know.
Do you mind if I ask you more questions about it?
Please.
I like want to get in your business.
Please, please, please.
What do you think it means about you that you're single?
What do I think it means?
What are you afraid it means?
Oh, I guess I'm afraid that it means that I'm very broken and don't know how to let love in.
Yeah.
You
so
know?
In that context, with that human thought, that's not a fact.
Yeah.
Of course, you would be embarrassed to admit that you want something that's not here yet. Because you're in that context of that original thought. Like making it mean like, I'm telling the world that I really do think I'm broken. There is something to fix and I do want something. And maybe that means that, like one of my clients put it so beautifully. She said, I was taught that it was pathetic to want a relationship and also pathetic to not have one already.
Yeah.
You know what? I feel that so deeply because all the inspirational talk nowadays is like, you don't need a man. And it's like, yeah, we know. We know we don't need one, but like, is it okay to want one sometimes? Like, is that still okay? And it sometimes doesn't feel okay.
Yeah. I think that that's like a myth wafting around feminist circles. It's like, you're less of a feminist if you want to find a partnership or if you want to get married or you want to like find love, you know, like, oh, that's a silly schoolgirl fantasy that you're like indulging in. And that's the patriarchy making you think that you maybe just want to have a relationship. Maybe just want to have sex. Maybe just want to do that, which is an inherently more permissive both and approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's coming up for y'all?
I wonder if you've heard this term. I don't know if it's a correct term, but sexual anorexia. Like,
oh, interesting.
Have you ever heard of this? It's probably not a like correct term, but I've heard it in like dating spaces and basically, and it kind of sounds like
boy sober.
It kind of sounds like your boy sobriety thing a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though I know it goes beyond sex. It's like also about companionship and whatever. But it's basically like when somebody feels like they can't handle all the intricacies that comes with having a sexual relationship with someone. Mm-hmm. So they completely abstain.
Yeah.
And I think they call it sexual anorexia because it's kind of like, you know, if you feel so out of control around food, then you might become anorexic and not want to eat anything
because
you can't.
I want some good sex. Give me some good sex.
But do you know what I'm saying? Do you
I know
what, like sometimes it's
easier. More trouble than it's worth, even though if you get it, it's really good.
I call it underfunctioning and overfunctioning in a dating context. And this is a term that I'm borrowing from Brené Brown, who I heard her talk about it in the context of anxiety. And so in the, you know, overfunctioning is the rigid wall. Putting the rigid wall. Oh, they must be this tall to ride. They must be this, like, they must have this degree. They must have this kind of profile. They must have the resume stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Rigid. That's like people who are like, well, I just haven't found somebody who meets my standards. You know, that sort of energy of self-protection.
Yeah.
And then on the other end is what you're, Emily, talking about, I think, which is like under-functioning, which is taking your hands all the way off the wheel.
Yeah.
And like, I just want somebody nice with a job, or I don't want it at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's underfunctioning in order to protect yourself.
I think I'm underfunctioning. I think I've sort of built this lie to myself so that I don't feel embarrassed.
Mm.
That for like the past, I don't know, 10 years that I've said I like to be, but I do. Like, I don't want to gaslight myself here, you know? I do like being single. I sleep like a starfish. I love it.
Yeah, that must be nice.
I love sleeping like a starfish. I get, you know, love and validation from friends and family, you know? So it is this thing where I don't feel like anything's missing, but I do, but I do want the extra thing.
Yeah. But like putting that, I'm so geeking out right now because like, look at the historical context of like, you have to be in a relationship and you're deconstructing that in real time.
So yeah.
You're now getting to center a want instead of a have to or need.
That's what's happening. That's what feels different.
Which is inherently like different and rooted around your agency. It's like a coming home to yourself.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a want, not a need.
Yeah.
But I'm scared to admit that I want it.
Yeah.
But you already have on the podcast.
I just did.
So you can't take it back now.
DM me, hotties.
So I guess the next part of it is like, what should Lauren do from here? Because another thing that we've been talking about is she's on these dating apps and the people that she's been connecting with, she kind of like has a hard time liking them, right? Like showing interest.
I don't like 90% of the people I come in contact with.
Yeah.
And I'm like, am I one of these people who's like, you must be this tall to ride the ride?
But like, I think that's realistic. Like nobody likes 90% of the people that come into contact.
You would have no time. So I think about it, and I write about this in my book with like, think about it like a Brooklyn warehouse party. Okay. So
I'm not going.
Oh my God. I will not be either, but
I'll go if it's at 6 p.m.
Let's just make it 6 p.m. and it's palatable and great. You walk into the party, there are 1,000 people there. Your body will instinctually know, I can only talk to like 0.5%, if that, of this group.
Yeah.
And of that group, your body would intuit body language, would intuit attractiveness, would intuit all these things. Let's assume all these people are available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your body would be like, okay, I'm for the few, not for the many. I can't get it. Suddenly on a dating app, there's this conception that so many people have that you should be getting more matches. And if you're not, then something's wrong and it means something about you. A match or a message doesn't mean anything about your love life. It's just a tool at the end of the day. And Pew Research did a study in 2023 that found that only 12 to 24% of committed couples and committed relationships met online.
Are you serious? That's nuts, because I feel like everybody that I ask now, that's how they met.
And the data differs between like a study done by Match.com, which of course it would differ.
Oh, yeah.
But to like Pew Research. So I wouldn't say that we can hold any stat up and be like, this is the absolute truth. However, I do think that that points to an empowering truth, which is like in-person dating is still very much a thing. Mm-hmm. A dating app is just one tool that is going to try to take advantage of you.
Totally.
And it's a business at the end of the day. It's there to make profit. And we've seen in like, you know, there was a 2019 suit that the FTC brought against Match Group, which owns Hinge, Tinder.
Oh, I read about this.
Yeah, and they sued them for creating bots that lured people into paid app upgrades. So these dating apps have a history of putting profit over people. So anyway, you got to go in with eyes wide open, use it as one tool, kind of like a dominatrix of the dating app.
Yeah.
And you got to become unbothered by the people who are wrong for you.
Yeah, to me, it's just like I just take out the – men aren't trash. But it's like I just go in and I take out the trash. Like
we'll
that's
cover
how
recycling.
I look at – I'm on – because on Hinge, you can see who likes you. And I'm like, no,
you're releasing
no,
them.
No,
you're releasing them to their right person.
I'm releasing
you know,
them.
What,
but you know, you clear it.
Yeah.
And then it's empty.
Generally think about them is it's such good practice also. Like if you're not meeting people out in the real world or if you're just in a rut or something, it's a really good way to practice like – one, telling whether you like someone and figuring out what is important to you, but also just talking to people.
Yeah.
Like talking things out and asking the right questions.
I think that yes to the questions part, so many people are getting on an app and trying to prove something to themselves about it's possible because I got this match and I liked them. But again, like I think it's really a tool to ask the boldest questions possible, to be your most self possible. I call these qualifying, disqualifying questions. And they're an entire chapter of the book.
Can you give us some examples?
100%. I'm going to grab my book. Hold on.
Here.
Thank you. Okay. Chapter, I don't remember what it is. Chapter 7, I think.
Oh God. How much money do you make?
So basically, this book is everything that I have learned over coaching hundreds of people as a feminist dating coach over the last 6 years. And then before that, I was a top professional matchmaker in New York.
Awesome.
And so when I was a matchmaker, I had to have thousands of phone calls with potential dates for my clients. Mm-hmm. I counted them. And when I had these calls, they were mind-numbing.
You poor thing. You're like, dating people you're not even dating.
Oh, my God. It was exhausting. But it was interesting because I had to figure out how to very quickly figure out who somebody was.
Yeah.
And if they met my client's preferences. So I created this concept of qualifying, disqualifying questions, mm-hmm. which in the words of Dr. Maya Angelou, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah.
These questions allow you to get beneath the surface of who somebody is and allow them to, like, show you who they are.
Love that.
So they're organized. I'm so type A. They're organized by preference.
You're in the right place.
So good.
By
so
like, preference.
By preference. So basically, like, if you have a preference for somebody who's family oriented, here are the questions I would ask.
Oh.
Financial independence, here are the questions I would ask. Growth mindset, here are the questions I would ask.
I want someone to leave me alone.
What does that mean? What do you mean?
Okay, wow, we're getting really deep. I think Lauren's afraid of being smothered.
Lauren's afraid of being controlled.
I love my freedom so much.
I love my freedom so much. But I do want the something else more. And it's like, well, how much am I assuming
that this relationship will feel shitty?
Yes. Why do I do? I'm like assuming the worst in literally every imaginary man.
I think what I'm hearing is that you want to find somebody who's like independent as well.
Yeah, they have their own stuff.
They have their own stuff. They have their own friends. Mm-hmm. And so I want to encourage you. Like, take or leave whatever fits or doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. But, like, what if you acknowledge what you're a no to? You're a no to being smothered. Cool. Great. You're not going to be smothered in the right relationship. So get into what you're a yes to. I'm a yes to what? Like, somebody who's independent, somebody who has their own friends, somebody who has their own plans, somebody who doesn't mind spending a few nights apart a week, mm-hmm. if not more than that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Somebody who might be game or is game for separate bedrooms if we do live together one day or
Absolutely.
Something like that, you know?
And so imagine, so it's kind of like what I did with the sex thing where I was like, you know what? I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I'm not going to have sex if I'm not really into it.
Yeah.
And then, oops, I didn't have sex for a long time. But it's like, I can do the same thing with dating where it's like, okay, well, I don't have to date somebody who smothers me. I don't have to date somebody
yes.
who is going to trigger my tendencies into codependent relationships. Yeah. You know, like, I know how to spot all these things. I just think there's definitely caution with going out there.
I want to find a line of questioning that would work for Lauren.
So one of my favorite qualifying, disqualifying questions to ask up front is, what's bringing you joy lately? Because it gets deep quick. It disqualifies the people who just want to like chat about nothing and travel in the weekend.
Yeah.
It also, if somebody says like nothing, it's cool and you might need a therapy session, but you get to bless and release.
Yeah.
And if somebody says like, oh my God, I'm so glad you asked, my nephew or my job is really exciting right now or whatever, mm-hmm. it gives them a window into their world. And then if they ask you the question back, then like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Let's keep the conversation
Love
going.
That.
And it's such an open-ended question. They can take it anywhere.
100%. I also think that like, if you want to go deeper, there's like a couple questions in like, what are you proudest of lately, Ooh. You know? Or even like, what have you learned about that you could talk about for hours, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, or what's your hottest take? These are questions that you can custom, there are hundreds of them, but you can customize them to your preferences.
Yeah.
Really never go on a mediocre date again because you're vetting people quickly with these deeper questions.
How do you feel about doing screeners? Because that's something I do also.
Like a call before an in-person date?
A video call, 5-minute video call, just to catch the vibe. Because it sucks when you show up and immediately you're like, oh, you can't have a conversation.
100%.
In person.
I think also my clients use voice memos on dating apps.
Oh, yeah, they do
and
that
voice
now.
Memos really actually help too because you can hear somebody's voice and their inflection. So I like a pre-date. Convo
yeah, you can't
as well.
Tell them it's a screener. You go, can we do a quick 5-minute video call before we schedule a date? And then to me, that's it literally is a screener for two reasons. One, because if they're not open to it and they're like, I don't do video calls, like just meet me, then I'm like, okay, great. Thank you for showing
Bless
me who you are.
Yeah.
Bye. And then it's a screener in the other obvious way where you're having a video call with someone and you can tell A, if they're real, B, if you can carry a conversation with them, which is really like the only two things. Like I get you can only tell so much from a video call, but.
Yeah, I would argue you actually can't tell that much. Because
you can tell if they're real or if they lied about their age.
I think for safety reasons, it's a good idea. But I actually think like the energy between two people when they're in the same space together is completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And I only say this because I dated, quote unquote, somebody for like 3 months who lived in another state.
Oh, wow.
And then I flew down to see him. We had video called several times. Right. I mean, so many times.
Oh, my God. How was that when you flew down to see him?
The second I got into the car at the airport, I knew I'd made a mistake.
Oh, no.
It was.
How long did you stay in Florida? Did you say Florida?
It was in Florida, but I didn't say Florida. I just said another state. You somehow knew it must Psychic. Have been Florida.
I'm a witch.
You're a witch. Wow.
That's weird.
You know, I only bring dating experts on the podcast if they also dabble in witchcraft. So I ended up staying in his apartment one night, and then I got a hotel the rest of the weekend. But it was so unbelievably bad. Oof. So unbelievably bad. And after that, I realized, like, wow, you really don't know. You can't know a person from afar. Like, right. You really do need to be in the same space. There's something intangible about it that I still can't quite explain.
Well, I think that's also a testament. I'm sorry that happened, first and foremost.
Oh, it's okay. I mean,
second of all, I also think it's a testament to, like, I advocate for a cutoff point in just talking. Like, you got to have a cutoff point to where we got to meet in person.
Oh, my God.
Pretty quickly. Totally. Because people, I mean, I've done this too, build up somebody in your brain of like, this is it.
Yes.
You know? And then you meet in person and suddenly things change because of the smells and sights and conversation in person.
I call it personality catfishing too. When you're texting with a guy and it's so great and then you show up and you're like, well, who is this?
Yeah, that is so real.
This isn't who I was texting.
Mm-hmm. That is so real. Yeah. I didn't mean to shoot down the Zoom date idea. I just think, like, it can't substitute the real thing.
What I would want people to screen for is, like, are you game? Like, that's exactly. Telling.
Yeah.
Are you game to hop on a phone? Are you not weird? You know, you mentioned, like, I bless and release people who are weird about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you game to have a conversation, a quick conversation? Are you playful about this? Right. Does it feel like really heavy or like really intense? Or do they have, like, or does it feel like, hey, how's it going? We're two human beings. Okay, cool. Do you want to meet up next week? Okay, cool. Great. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, that game to playness. I used to do improv and I wrote a lot of sections of this book based on my improv days because the idea of like play, yes, and, you know, really helps in the dating context. Play to the top of your intelligence is an improv rule. I don't know if you, I mean, you're
I know about, but, I, know, I do improv.
You
yeah,
do
yeah.
improv.
I got it.
But unfortunately, I did take an improv class at UCP. It was a dark
we all
time.
Did.
Yeah, it
we
was
all
a dark
did.
Time.
But the idea of like, assume that the person you're talking to is also intelligent and great and wanting to meet up with you. And if that proves not to be the case, if it doesn't feel aligned, bless and release, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Instead of couching what you want, instead of like minimizing what you want in your personality, just like assume their game.
Yeah.
And if they turn out not to be, then bless and release swiftly.
I totally agree. Emily, for me, it's figuring out if you're even willing to do a video call.
Yeah, like,
it's less about the video call.
No, I totally get it, actually. It's like, will they take the time? Because that's another thing that you worry about. I mean, people get ghosted. Like, people don't even take the time to show up for their date. So if there's somebody who will show up, even though it is just a 5-minute pre-Zoom call, it still is an extra step.
Yeah.
So that does make a lot of sense.
Trying to think if I have any other personal questions before we get into some listener submitted.
Yeah, we have a couple listener questions, but
actually one is from me. I thought of it. I was like, this question is from Lauren, LOL.
You wrote into the question box?
I did. I was like, well, I have a question. I have so many questions, but as a fellow witchy person, because you have accidentally revealed yourself as being witchy, sorry. How can you tell if something is intuition and self-preservation or if you're just...
Like when you get a bad feeling about somebody.
I'll show up on a date and be like, nope. And it's like, is that real? Or am I being unreasonable?
Is that my divine feminine intuition?
Oh, God.
Oh, how I wrote it is, how can you tell if something is your intuition or just butterflies or bias?
So I think that when you're on a date, there's so many hormones and so much like happening that it's actually difficult to know what's going on under the surface, which is why on the date, I love a bathroom break. It sounds so simple, but literally going to the bathroom in the middle of the date when you don't need to and taking a deep freaking breath and being like, what's happening in my body?
How do I feel?
Right? Does it feel somewhat like fun to be here in their presence, even if maybe this person isn't like the person I know that, mm-hmm. but is it kind of fun? Or is my body like, is it a shrinking feeling of like, absolutely not.
Do
no,
I
thank you.
I kind of want to climb out the window. Right.
Do I want, am I trying to think subconsciously of like how to end it? Then that's your body being, you can trust that.
Love this. Right? This is intuitive dating. This is mindful dating.
Mm-hmm. But you go check to the bathroom. You got like, go yeah. to the bathroom to set a boundary, because in person, when you're like in person with somebody, you got their energy going. It's really hard to know actually with granularity what's going on. So totally. Going to the bathroom is really helpful. I also, in my program, The Brazen Breakthrough, and in the book, I share my date feedback system, which is very type A and my Ooh. Favorite thing in the world. It's a spreadsheet. Okay.
Okay.
And it is where my clients and me, before my clients, measure every single date for themselves uh-huh. and like tune in with their intuition on paper. And some of my clients actually like realized that the date was the best date they ever went on, or an absolutely horrendous date, with the spreadsheet. Whereas in person, they were like, it was fine. You know,
really?
Like, yeah, because when you write it down and you ask yourself questions,
that's
like,
so helpful.
When did I come alive? What questions did they ask me
yeah.
that were like good? What does my intuition say about what they felt or thought about me? Mm-hmm. 95% of the time, my clients can guess with accuracy what they felt or thought. And I know that as a matchmaker, because I had calls with both
yeah,
people.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If they're really honest, you know? And so that eliminates, if you just learn to trust yourself in that way, you can eliminate a lot of the like, what do they think? You yeah. should be centering yourself anyway. But then asking yourself, what's the most beautiful and true next step mm-hmm. after every single date can help you get in the groove of like following your intuition. And I don't recommend going for the spark or the slow burn. Mm-hmm. I recommend asking, do I have curiosity for another date? And that being the simple rubric.
I love that. I think a lot of people overthink dating. They're like, yeah. oh, am I ready for this? Do I really see a future with him? And it's like, do you enjoy his company? Could you go on a second date?
Yeah.
It's
and
a
you don't
date.
Need to think so far ahead.
And
also.
If you show up and you're like, no, in your body, then mm-hmm. odds are that's not going to be your person. You can trust yourself. But then I'd be asking about, how are you vetting them? Like, what questions yeah. are you asking? How are you like prepping for the date to be in your body? And like,
yeah.
you know?
That's
yeah, yeah.
very helpful.
A listener wrote in, and I think this is very relevant because we're talking about ditching these patriarchal values, but is the whole idea of how a man treats his mother, how he will treat his wife, still valid? Have you ever heard this before? Like, if yeah. he treats his mom well, I mean, I want to hear your answer, but I kind of feel like I've heard people say like, oh, he has sisters, so he knows how to treat women. I'm like, that shouldn't be the reason why he knows how to treat women well.
Right.
You
That's
know?
Actually
like,
scary.
Yeah.
That you like, would only know.
I only respect everyone, a woman if she's related to me. Such mm-hmm. a great guy.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Like, everybody should treat their mom well. I don't think that really says anything.
I think you need to be looking at how they do relationships full stop. Right? Like, how they mm-hmm. do friendship, how they do, like, you know, how they talk about people in their life who are no longer in their life.
Exes.
Do they, right, exes. How they treat their family. However, like, there are people with really complicated relationships to their mother. And I don't think that how they treat their mother, like, it's an ism. And I think that mm-hmm. so many, an ism meaning it's a piece of dating advice to put in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and make like you feel like you're
black
in
and white.
Control, right? And this is why TikTok dating advice can be so black or white. Like, if he wanted to, he would, right? Like, mm-hmm. maybe there's nuance
right.
sometimes in our interpersonal relationships. But I think that looking at holistically, how do they do relationships can be so telling and important.
Yeah, because you can have a really bad relationship with an ex or a parent, and the way you talk about it shows you everything you need to
yes.
know about them.
You know? I mean, I immediately get skeptical of somebody when they start shit-talking their ex. Because, like, you can't hear that person's side of the story. You know mm-hmm, what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even if everything they're saying is true, they're biased.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the woo-woo phrase that I also really love, which is, you can't miss what's for you.
There you go. What's meant for you will not pass you by.
Exactly. Can I thought of a question.
Yeah, of course.
This is a toughie.
Okay.
So when you're on an in-person date and it's the end of the date.
Yeah.
And they go, let's do this again.
Yeah.
But you don't want to.
Uh-huh.
What the fuck do you do?
Oh my God, such a good question.
You run away.
Because
you bolt. You say nothing, you just bolt. No, I think that, okay, first of all, if you get nervous and you say, yeah, sounds good, because your body is flooded with fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's okay if you follow up the next day and say, hey, I'm actually not feeling a romantic connection and I wish totally. You the best. Like, full permission, just be human here. And sometimes we say things that we don't really mean. Like, mm-hmm. be clear when you feel available to that clarity, when you're, like, in an emotionally safe zone.
Yeah.
So if you – I think it requires practice to be honest. If you do want to – I think honesty is great and really powerful. It takes practice. So literally getting a friend, I mean, like, can we practice this date ending?
Mm.
And can I practice saying – I do this with my clients all the time. And actually one of my clients, Mishi, we talked about this on my podcast, she practiced and practiced with me. And then the next date she went on was her now partner. And so she was like ready to say no. She was ready to go on a bad date.
Yeah.
But like it ended up being good.
Oh, this guy is nice.
So just practice saying like, not feeling it and like wish you all the best.
Yeah. Know?
Thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people buy your book?
So you can buy Thank You More Please, A Feminist Guide to Breaking Dumb Dating Rules and Finding Love. Everywhere books are sold on June 11th. You can also find me at Date Brazen on TikTok and Instagram. And my website is datebrazen.com.
Thank you, Lily.
Thank you.
You blew my mind like 7 times today.
Yeah, I mean, amazing. That's being generous. I am so excited to read this book. Thank you so much for joining us today and for solving all of Lauren's dating problems.
Oh my God, my pleasure.
Well, that's it for today's episode. Be sure to send your questions to dst@betches.com. to get them answered.
Follow us at Everything's Fine on Instagram. And if you like this episode, please write us a review. And don't forget to check out our DST merch on shop.betches.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And of course, follow me at Lubination.
Follow me at Lauren Hope Crass. And remember, we're always with you.
Through thick and thin, baby. Diet Starts Tomorrow is produced by Rebecca Steinberg and Lauren Hope Crass. Editing by Rebecca Steinberg. Social media by Lauren Hope Crass. Guest booking by Allie Friedlander. Be sure to follow Diet Starts Tomorrow on all socials and send us your emails to dst@betches.com or your voicemails to 212-287-5650.
Betches.